Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Gino Magnifico, the Army Contracting Command's Chief Information Officer. Gino, it's been about 2 years since you were last on my show, and this is actually a third time you're going to be on my show, so this is very exciting for me. So welcome back.
Well, thank you, Jason. I really appreciate it, and appreciate your interest in the Army Contracting Command. A lot going on, and really excited about our future.
The last time we spoke, I guess, about 2012 timeframe. At the time, you had told me about a new contract writing system that was starting the beginning stages of development. What's the status of that effort?
Yeah, so we've had some interesting fits and starts with that effort, but we've had a very strong relationship working with the Army staff. Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Army for Procurement staff has made ACC the executive agent for requirements associated with the new contract writing system. And so we've had the team here in place now for a couple of years working requirements, and Colonel Michelle Sanner has led that effort for us here, doing a great job. Really, the community is very, very excited about getting a new contract writing system. It's been about 13, 14 years since that's happened. And so it's kind of an exciting time around Army procurement. Yeah, we're looking at all these different capabilities that we're going to get with a modernized system. As a CIO, I'm very excited of re-engineering that architecture and looking at a more web-friendly capability, a network-friendly capability that this new system promises. Done a lot of good work with business process re-engineering, spent a lot of time looking at those requirements, involved the entire community from across the Army and all the different commands. We've hosted many different user engagements, both here and in Washington, D.C., to really kind of document those requirements, working very closely with the PEO in charge of the program, POEIS, up in D.C., and really looking forward to the promise of the new system. Probably a few years out before we see it fielded, but a lot of good things going on with that, and I think the community is very much ready for a replacement.
Yeah, 13 or 14 years. I mean, it seems like that might as well be 50 years ago in technology talk. From a CIO's perspective, you said you're really looking forward to the architecture, the web presence. What do you do to prepare? What's your role in dealing with the requirements and capabilities?
One of the key roles that we're looking at here is ACC is a global command. We have functions all across the globe working everywhere the Army works and in some places that they don't work. So applications and capabilities that we field into that environment always present a unique challenge because we're not just dealing with CONUS platforms, networks, things of that nature, but also OCONUS environments, leveraging other architectures and capabilities around the world in all kinds of different environments, all kinds of different capabilities. And so these applications that that we're looking to field have to be able to operate in those kinds of environments. And as such, it's a big role for the CIO to kind of oversee that and make sure that, you know, we incorporate not just the business aspects of an application, but also the technology platforms that these applications have to run on, and to streamline those capabilities so that we're able to provide these capabilities in a centralized cloud-based environment so that we have as much leverage and capability and provide that to the user and to our customers as well. And so it's really kind of a challenge for us to look at things like that, satellite communications, sustainment operations overseas. All of those various functions and roles have to be captured, have to be accounted for, and have to be executed at the time these applications roll out. The promise of the new system, of course, is that it allows us to leverage an application that's specifically designed to execute those kinds of mission areas. And that's why we spent a lot of time in these last couple of years looking at the requirements from a lot of different perspectives, not just the functional piece. And I think we've done a really good job with that. I'm very proud of what the team has done. I know General Ted Harrison, who's our commander, is very proud of the team as well. And we keep working very closely with Ms. Hsu, the ASALT up in D.C., and certainly Mr. Harry Halleck, the DASA-P. It's a team environment, all the commands, as I said, but certainly we have a very specific role in managing the technology aspect of it.
As you're going through this and talking about the different challenges you have between OCONUS and CONUS and the different networks and the different ways to ensure that globally this new writing system can be supported and used, how do you deal with the fact that you're still a couple years off and the technology today is going to be much different than it will be 2 or 3 years ago, and it's much different than it was 2 or 3 years before us?
Everybody does get excited on the new systems, but unfortunately, with a few years left to go, you still have to maintain the existing platform. And so one of the things we've really tried to kind of invigorate within our environment is kind of the servicing aspect of what we do on a daily basis. The Army, and I think rightfully so, and all of DOD is really kind of going to these cloud-based solutions, and for a very good purpose and for very good reasons. And being able to leverage that really kind of changes the role of the CIO in the future. And so we've become very much so a service-based function. As opposed to, in, you know, years gone by, we may have been more of a bricks and mortar type function. In other words, we managed hardware, we kept the applications running on these platforms, and really focused more along the lines of hardware and networks. Well, that's going to be done for us in these highly centralized environments. And so what's left for us to execute are really kind of the servicing aspects of what we do on a day in and day out basis. And what I mean by that is making sure that the customers are getting the right capabilities, making sure that the response times, such issues as latency or network failures or things of that nature, are really serviced. You can't help those things from occurring, but you can help how you respond to them. And that's really kind of the challenge we see for the next few years in managing these older legacy systems until such time as they're replaced with a more modern capability, but really kind of managing the service line and making sure that users, to the degree we can do that, given the nature of these applications, given the nature of the networks, that we're able to provide a service day in, day out, pumping 24/7 to the user, to the desktop, and making sure that we give them the best experience possible. And that's really kind of the changing role, I believe, of the CIO, is in the service line.
I hear that more and more from CIOs. The more I talk to, they tell me how they're changing their organizations to be more customer service focused, to be more, if you will, bringing people who have a business side and a tech side. Has that happened to your office yet? Have you been, over the last few years since we've talked, really saying, how do we re-engineer my own office to meet those services?
Yeah, we actually started that about 5 years ago when we stood up the command. One of the unique aspects of this job is we're not really a bricks and mortar type organization. In other words, I don't have a data center, never have. And so I've really been in that kind of business now for about 5 years because we facilitate a lot of the services that the command derives from external partners, whether those external partners be Army or industry. And so we've actually had that role for quite a while. And some of the newer aspects of the role, because of some changes in Army policies over the last 2 or 3 years, we've seen a lot more emphasis being put on IT expenditures, spending, investments, things of that nature. And so that's driven us to come up with a really, I believe, is a profound capability that we affectionately call governance. The term is much like knowledge management, you know, 10 miles wide and about an inch deep. But the way we're trying to execute it is really from a real business perspective. In other words, one of the things we want to do is we want to look and see what the command is investing in its technology platform, where are the redundancies, where are the inefficiencies, and start to kind of weed those things out. And we've been executing that exercise for about 3 years now. We have a multi-phase approach, multi-layered approach, so that everything that goes through the command, we evaluate from a technology aspect, and also from a business aspect. You know, what's the business rationale for what we're asking or what we're being asked to execute? And then what's the technology aspect of that same requirement? And so we tie those two things very closely together and then make a determination. A lot of it's done at the CIO level, depending on the threshold. Those that raise above that the CIO threshold goes to the commander himself and his commander's board. And so it's a inclusive process. From all across the command, all of the directors and commanders from across the command sit on that board. And the idea there is to really kind of give voice to the users themselves. What do they need? What can we facilitate for them? And really kind of bring that CRM process to what we do day in and day out.
It's interesting the way you kind of presented it, because what I'm seeing, again, through a lot of other agencies and a lot of other CIOs I speak with, is that portfolio stat that OMB has been pushing. But whether you call it that, or you call it the investment review board, or you call it some kind of governance, are you guys already seeing some benefits? Like, does something come to mind, an example that says, well, we had this one time where we, and then the business and technology side kind of made things better? Has anything come to mind?
We've got a lot of examples. And I'll kind of generalize a couple of them for you. One of the things that we noticed several years ago is that how we invested in fundamental information management services at the desktop was really kind of depending on location and the region you were in. Because we were paying some of those bills and we actually got to see some of those servicing contracts, one of the things we did was to consolidate that into a single SLA with Seven Sigma, which does most of the CONUS-based execution for the Army on the technology side. And so we literally, as a command, stood up a single entity function with Seven Sigma to provide a costing platform for all of ACC CONUS to be able to derive this basic services that any office would require. So fundamental things like phone service, IT response time, help desk support, all of that was captured as part of that SLA. And those costs were rationalized, standardized across the command. Everybody pays the same amount. Those services that were provided by the local environment at no cost would be provided across the platform. And so we derived a lot of savings through that, and we were able to consolidate those services, standardize them, and provide them all the way across the board. So that's just one piece that saves quite a bit of funding, actually. Other areas that we see is a lot of different licensing scenarios by which, you know, people were requesting 6-7 licenses on a specific application. Those licenses already existed within the ACC sphere of influence, and we were able to provide those to the operating locations at no cost because we'd already paid for the number of licenses that we've already set aside. And so we saw a lot of those kinds of functions, some of them small, some of them medium-sized, some of them large, but all of them savings. And so we've been able to really save quite a few million dollars in just being able to execute those kinds of functions for the command.
I think that's a great example where you're bringing people together. It's almost that idea of shared services. And I think that, again, everything you're kind of talking about, I'm hearing from across the government. So obviously it's already being done as a best practice on your end. And I think it's grown across government. Let's take a quick break. My guest today is Gino Magnifico, the Army Contracting Command's CIO. I'm Jason Miller. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com. Welcome back. My guest today is Gino Magnifico, the Army Contracting Command's CIO. I'm Jason Miller. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now, Gino, before break, we spent a lot of time talking about your new contracting writing system, kind of the change in role of the CIO more broadly, but something you guys have been doing for the last maybe 4 or 5 years around services. I want to move over to another former priority that you talked to me about 2 years ago, new business intelligence tools that you're providing both the contracting officers and other acquisition folks. Give me a sense of what's happening. What kind of difference are they making?
Yeah, a lot of things are going on associated with BI, and kind of take back to one of the exciting pieces is we were able to capture a lot of those day-in, day-out requirements as part of the new system. And as we did the business process reengineering, certainly managing your environment, not only just writing contract, but also managing that data and really looking at more strategic decision-making capabilities as part of that platform is going to help us. Certainly some of our legacies do that right now, some of our legacy PI capabilities. But one of the areas that we really want to try to profoundly impact, certainly with the new system, and we've tried to do that in a couple of other initiatives lately, has been really enhancing the user experience around business intelligence. Certainly at the management level, you're receiving that product in the form of dashboards or straight data, but really a lot of BI systems tend to be manual in nature in terms of inputting of the data. And one of the things we really want to look at is how do we leverage existing applications and their data to really kind of work the pre-population aspect of some of these BI systems. Because there's only a couple of ways a BI system can get the data. One is through some sort of an interface or an integration with another application or business application, or someone has to manually input that data. And unfortunately, too often within certainly the DoD sphere, from a user perspective, it's the manual piece. And so as we look at BI capabilities of, you know, that we're fielding and or getting ready to field, we want to try to take out that manual process as much as possible. That provides a lot of benefits in a lot of different ways. One of the main benefits is should cut down on the input errors. Anytime you have a lot of fat fingering going on in terms of feeding these kinds of systems, you're always open to data errors, you know, and that really kind of slows down the whole business intelligence process as it flows through the different layers of leadership. And so being able to automate a lot of that data and move that data around in the environment is really going to provide a capability for all levels of business intelligence, not just the strategic or mid-tier management, but also that user experience. Anything we can do with pre-population, anything we can do with data sourcing is going to help the whole process work much better, provide more accurate data in a faster, more responsive manner. And so that's really kind of the emphasis points we've tried to put in place with business intelligence across certainly ACC. Certainly, we're still managing some of our legacies that may or may not be optimized in that environment, but we work that every day. A couple of good examples on, we have a very profound profile around the SharePoint tool within ACC. Workspace. What we're trying to do is automate the workspace so that we give the users an automated, basically an automated desktop from which they can store their data, retrieve their data, share their data across the platforms, and not just sharing within the office, but sharing across the command. And that's the promise of these kind of enterprise capabilities, is the ability to kind of share data, whether you're sitting in Rock Island or whether you're sitting in ACC, New Jersey, or even in Huntsville, Alabama. That's certainly aspects of knowledge management as well, but all of that kind of wraps together in terms of how we execute the mission set of the ACC on a day-in and day-out basis, certainly from a user perspective.
I want to go back to one thing that you mentioned about the business intelligence stuff. You talked about the business process reengineering and how this is going to fit into the new contract writing system. Do I understand that correctly?
Correct.
So now, though, in the meantime, though, you want to figure out how to take some of the data and get it into the current set of tools or even the new set of tools. Are you looking at some kind of new software to do that? What's the process by which you're saying, okay, how do we move the data from database A to this business intelligence software?
Well, ideally, what you'd like to do is link closely with your business partners in terms of their data. Not all data is certainly procurement type of data. You have logistics or requiring activity data, you have financial management data, and then you certainly have data that's generated by the contract writing tools. What we'd like to do is work those kinds of capabilities together. So we're not replicating that data, but we're getting that data from source application. So things like GFIBS, things like the other Army financial tools, logistics tools, we form these partnerships. And it kind of goes back to the concept of the changing role of the CIO into the servicing aspect more so than the kind of the bricks and mortar aspect. It's really establishing, and those are the kinds of functions that future CIOs are going to be working as they work. Certainly the business technology CIO is going to be working as we get more and more into that shared business environment, end-to-end business process. A lot of those terms that we've heard for the last 20 years, certainly within the DoD business sector, about these systems coming online. A lot of that is starting to turn into reality. And so being able to move that data, leverage that data, becomes really a question of standards, certainly a question of applications, but also being able to kind of facilitate partnerships by which all that can happen is going to be a key role in how we're going to be moving forward in these functions. Certainly by the time the new contract writing system comes online, brings us some of that capability, data sharing capability. Those are the kinds of things we're really going to be excited about.
In the meantime, I mean, do you foresee needing to buy software? Do you foresee just getting the pieces in place, the agreements, the data standards in place, then when this new contract writing system does come up, it's almost like, and I'll use the simple term, flip of a switch, then the data can start to be integrated more easily?
Correct. And that gets to really the next 3, 4, 5 years. It's almost a trial run for preparation of these new applications. A lot of our senior business partners have already traversed that environment. Certainly the Army Financial Management side has traversed it with the introduction of GFIBS. You know, certainly there's new logistics systems coming online, whether they're through the ERP systems or other capabilities, but they're starting to kind of coalesce around these business standards. And so those play a vital role in managing that data as well. Otherwise, you're back to the old legacy point-to-point translators. And one of the things you'd like to do is really kind of get out of that environment into this more shared data kind of environment so that it takes out that human interaction and moves that data around a lot faster and really relieves all of these different environments from having to replicate data from other environments. You know, in other words, contracting environment, replicating logistics data or financial management data and vice versa.
And I think that a lot of, as you said, it's already happening in some other places. And I think that's key because then people are comfortable with it. So when you ask to do it from a contracting perspective, they're not surprised or no, they're not taken. You want to do what with my data? It's like, no, we just want to do the exact same thing that you're already doing in these other areas. And that's going to hopefully make your life a little easier.
Yeah, one of the big challenges there is really kind of that transparency change. It's a lot of functions of the past was, you know, you own the data, it was your data, you control that data. And I think the way the future is certainly securing that data, but then really becoming more of part of a larger business process that data serves a vital function for. If we're getting budget and accounting data fed to us from those source systems, that's less inputting that our people have to do for that same type of data. Same for logistics, same for other financial management aspects, really is a time saver and really automates a lot of that data so that more time is spent focused on the functional mission for contract writers. You know, you're not sitting there trying to manage accounting data, requiring activity data. You're actually moving that data a little bit, but you're also executing the mission that's given to you.
Right. I was going to say, you spend more time doing the actual job than worrying about the data and inputting the data.
Correct.
You mentioned the dashboards. That was another priority last time we spoke. You seem to insinuate that senior managers are using dashboards. Just give me a quick sense. How are they using it? What difference are they making?
We've taken a lot of major steps forward on dashboarding and really kind of this, you know, it's part of a larger strategic decision-making process of which these tools feed. A lot of it comes from the maturing aspect of business intelligence, certainly across ACC and probably across the Army. As this data becomes more available and becomes more accurate and provides a better platform from which you can make your decisions, the representation of that data becomes critical. You know, certainly to our senior executives, looking at that data, evaluating that data, moving resources around the command so that we're fulfilling maybe short-term impacts from maybe loss of manning or a ramp-up of a particular mission moving forward. We can move those assets around, and in some cases, resourcing around to meet those requirements. A lot of that is done through forecasting, and a lot of that forecasting is done by the data. And so being able to leverage that and tracking those trends over time, it gives you a real strategic approach to the business at hand. And so even in a downsizing budget environment, there are spikes in the process. And the command that can move and leverage that, their resources to resolve those spikes as quickly and as efficiently as possible, can be well ahead of the game.
I think well said. Let's take a quick break. My guest today is Gino Magnifico, the Army Contracting Command's CIO. I'm Jason Miller, your host. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com. Welcome back. My guest today is Gino Magnifico, the Army Contracting Command's Chief Information Officer. I'm Jason Miller, your host. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now, Gino, before break, we're talking a lot about business intelligence tools and dashboards. All of this, and I think you mentioned it a little bit earlier in the program as well, plays into the fact that the cloud now exists and so much of the data can reside there and you can pull data from different places. In fact, I think the Army Contracting Command, if I remember clearly, about you guys have been an early adopter of cloud, I think almost 4 years ago. When we talked the first time, you were in the cloud already. Talk about the benefits you're already seeing of being an early adopter of this technology and really what comes next in the area of cloud and around applications or infrastructure or wherever you see it going next.
Certainly the command, almost from the inception, and we all sat down and strategically planned where the command was going and what it would shape like, what it would be shaped like, and what would be the business process associated with the execution day in, day out of ACC. Didn't take you long to figure out, as a global entity, you really had to look at global solutions. And so when we stood up the command, we had somewhere in the neighborhood about 115 locations, almost all of them tied to very specific servers. That was a platform that was probably going to be a little unwieldy for us to be able to execute, certainly way too expensive to execute on a year-in and year-out basis. And so we started to consolidate those servers into these central hosting environments and basically got it down to about two hosted environments now. And so we've been able to really kind of pump out that service across the command. We have deployed assets in all kinds of environments. And to be able to have to tie them and slave them to specific servers everywhere was really kind of a step beyond. So it wasn't called cloud back then. It was basically called these mega center concepts. But we went to that concept to give us more capability, certainly save us some resourcing. But really we were looking at a kind of a mission focus for a global entity that had to pump data day in and day out. And so you might have 2-3-man teams operating on a satellite communication device on a mountain somewhere in Afghanistan, somewhere in Africa, somewhere just about anywhere you can name. And so to be able to do that, you've got to have a good, solid platform to be able to provide that kind of service across the globe. Certainly that gave us the capabilities to do that. And once we've consolidated those platforms, we're able to provide that kind of world-class service out to all of our users wherever they resided, certainly cutting the hardware costs. But one of the big factors that we noted early and often was the ability to become more secure. And by that, I mean, as security patches came out, one of the traditional faults in a client server environment was you had all these servers everywhere being managed individually. And as you started pumping out changes, patches, things of that nature, you were reliant on those local environments to load those patches up. And a lot of them were very key security patches. If they took 2-3 months to do it, they became vulnerable during that entire period of time. The way the process works now, we do that centrally, and we do it globally. Once we load a security patch, it's loaded for everybody. And so we went from a time frame of about 6 months to ensure everybody downloaded the patches, and a lot of that was through phone calls and conversations, to a point where we just did it probably within a matter of days. And so that is a huge environment. And as cybersecurity becomes more and more a player for us, certainly as technologists, certainly as business leaders, securing that data, making sure it's safe, becomes a top priority. These kind of centrally hosted environments really give you a leg up in being able to do that.
I think that's a great example. A lot of people forget about simple things like patching. I mean, when you talk about cybersecurity and problems that any organization have, whether it's government or a private sector, it's just doing that simple stuff like patching. I think I remember hearing from the SANS Institute, they're a training, cybersecurity training firm here in the D.C. area. Then they said, you know, if you just do simple things like patching, you could solve like 80% of all your cybersecurity concerns. So where do you see it happening next? I mean, are you looking at cloud for instance, this contract writing system we've talked a lot about that will live in the cloud, I think you mentioned. What other mission-critical apps do you think are living there now or will live there in the near future?
I think everything will live there in the future. I think certainly, if you look at industry, everyone's going that way. As we sit and look out into the future, and certainly my staff, we've been sitting down and trying to project where we're going to be in 3, 5, and 7 years, maybe not physically, but certainly where we're going to be strategically. Big issue for us now is zero client, really taking that last big step over into the cloud and putting everything onto that cloud and really managing from that perspective. And so that's going to help us in a lot of different ways. Certainly all the benefits I've already outlined, from security to control of the applications themselves, establishing these baselines, is certainly going to help. One of the key areas a zero-client environment really provides you is the ability to save a ton of money on your IT platform costs. You know, your enterprise lifecycle management costs go way down. You know, you're buying devices now that basically are cloud devices. So they're no longer sustaining powerful platforms onto themselves. And so the cost can go down from, and I'm just going to throw out a couple of costs here, you can go down from $1,500 to $300 cost per unit. That's a huge resource savings for any entity, and certainly a military entity. And so as we start looking at these capabilities, and that's why these new systems are kind of an exciting development, because they are targeted towards these kinds of environments. And as they come online, you're no longer dealing with 14, 15, 18-year-old architectures that aren't optimized to work in these kind of zero-client environments. And so the benefit of making that investment, going to a new system, has a lot of different levels of benefit to certainly the Army, certainly to ACC, but really to the user. And so now the cloud frees everyone up to work from different types of environments, whether you're talking about your office environment, whether you're talking about a home environment, or even on the road environment. And that kind of leads me into other devices like tablets, smartphones, things of that nature are starting to make their appearance onto our environments. And now these kinds of capabilities, this type of cloud solution set, allows you to operate in that kind of an environment with those type of tools.
You mentioned zero client. One of the things about that is it goes back in many ways to what technology looked like 15, 20, 30 years ago, when you just had a keyboard and a monitor and everything gets plugged into the wall, the mainframe setup of 20, 30 years ago. Is that where you're heading toward? Not the mainframe setup, obviously, but the idea that every member of the Army contracting commander, many, will just have a keyboard, a mouse, and a monitor.
Yeah, I guess the old saying about everything old is new again.
Yeah.
Kind of plays into this one, doesn't it? But certainly, yes. I don't know about everyone. Again, we have deployable assets that have to have some localized computing power when they go into these bare base environments. But certainly a profound number of users within the ACC, once we go to that kind of a model, will certainly be leveraging that capability. And again, the capability will free the environment up to work in all kinds of different types of scenarios. So the traditional scenario of an office, as industry is finding out, could change quite a bit, which is it's not a brand new concept for the government side. But certainly leveraging it more and more with tools that allow you to work in these kinds of environments are going to be part of probably a evolutionary change in the way we do business.
Very nice. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of those new priorities that you kind of gave us a little bit of a hint at. My guest today is Gino Magnifico, the Army Contracting Command's CIO. I'm Jason Miller, your host. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com. Welcome back. My guest today is Gino Magnifico, the Army Contracting Command's Chief Information Officer. I'm Jason Miller, your host. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Gino, before break, and we were talking a lot about your older priorities. You mixed in some new priorities, I'm sure, as we talked about it. Let's look forward. What are you hoping to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
Well, I alluded to a major change with our zero client, but really it's the introduction of additional capabilities, certainly tablets, certainly smartphones, certainly communication devices that allow us to become more proficient in the theater space, certainly the battle space, things of that nature. Our deployable assets are always asking for more, better tools, more responsive tools to be able to leverage capabilities. And one of our primary goals when we look at those kinds of platforms is to be able to leverage the same tool sets that we use in sustainment operations as we do in contingency or expeditionary environments. And so we're using the same basic tools. The old concept of train like you fight and fight like you train comes into play there. You know, if you have to, in the past, we developed specific tools for deployable capabilities or satellite communications environments or deployed expeditionary capabilities, and we want to move away from that. We want to be able to use the same tools that we're using, whether we're stateside, whether we're in a sustained operation location overseas, or whether we're in an expeditionary environment. To do that and to be in the cloud, we're going to have a lot of service aspects defined, optimized, and provided to the users as they go out. And so we've got to figure out really smart ways to remove latencies, to make the tool as real-time as possible to their typical user experience when they're sitting in a desk in Fort Hood, Texas. And so those are some of the goals that we work day in and day out. Some of those sound like they're simple, but when you get into the eaches of making that happen across a global environment, it certainly challenges any CIO, and it certainly challenges this CIO. So, but that's really one of the goals that we really are trying to execute is for the foreseeable future is enhance the user experience wherever it resides, but certainly in these expeditionary and contingency environments.
One of the challenges that I've heard time and again, whether it's from talking with you or talking with other people in the DoD, is that the network infrastructure, the way that certain places have, you know, technology is not the same as the U.S. So if you're sitting, as you said, in Fort Hood, Texas, they have plenty of good, solid, you know, DSL lines, T1 lines that can run big, thick applications. But if you're sitting, as you said, in Kuwait or Afghanistan or several other countries that may not have that same infrastructure, that's where you get the latency. So how do you deal with that? How do you take that into account that everything's got to function almost on the lowest end of the infrastructure?
It's a lot of different moving pieces to make those kinds of things happen. Part of it is negotiation. Part of it is communication. Part of it is just knowledge. I mean, just knowing who are the critical contact points to be engaged with, being able to discuss, you know, what those mission critical issues are, you know, by unit with some of these supporting environments, and then being able to, and in some cases, being willing to make investments directly to provide enhanced capabilities. Working within the Army side, a lot of that infrastructure is provided to us. And so being able to negotiate with other units and making sure that the contact points are certainly aware of your critical mission area, making sure that we've got access to an optimized network solution is certainly part of the job. And a lot of that gets down to fundamental human-to-human conversation, communication, and knowledge sharing. I have yet to find anybody in the field when we've called and articulated some of our issues with our field locations that they didn't all step up and say, great, you know, let's take a look at this together. Let's see if we can make this happen, see what we can give you. Sometimes we have to wait a little bit before they can provide us some additional capability, but it's never been an issue of not supporting the effort, not supporting the Army teams.
You also mentioned mobility earlier on in our conversation. Tablets, smartphones really starting to come into your environment. Are you seeing contracting officers and other acquisition professionals wanting to use those types of devices to fulfill their mission? Or is it being used for other things that not necessarily the actual, kind of, if you will, I'll call it the big contracting effort, but more the smaller pieces of the contracting effort?
The answer is yes.
to both, of course, all of the above.
No, a day doesn't go by where we're not being asked to provide more, better. Certainly tablets is, I liken it to kind of the BlackBerry explosion many years ago now. But certainly all of these kinds of capabilities are prevalent in certainly the industry workspace, and then it kind of bleeds over into the government side. But a lot of these tools and the mobility of the tools really frees up not just the executive, but the desktop people to work in their workspace. And so we're being asked constantly to look at these kinds of technologies as they come out, being able to provide these technologies, and also the applications that they run on. A huge challenge for us in that environment is the cybersecurity aspect, because, you know, working for an organization like the Army and being in the CIO and being in any functional environment nowadays, cybersecurity is a huge player for what it is we do, and what it is we can authorize, and what devices actually get to the users themselves. If there's ways to secure the device, it gets onto the network. If there's no way to secure the device, there's no way it gets on the network. And so that's becoming a major player for us, almost as much as the funding. You know, to be able to buy these tools, you have to have the resources to make that happen. But almost just as importantly is they have to be secure. And so it's incumbent on everyone, and certainly the CIO, to make sure that these things are secure, so when they come online for the environment, people are confident that the data that they're transacting through those devices are as secure as it can be.
So where are you guys at with the mobile concept and mobile devices? Are you running pilots? Are you testing them out somewhere, or are you just at the beginning stages of figuring out that security piece?
No, the Army's done a good job over the last 3 or 4 years. They initiated a pilot for some of the smartphones and tablets. That pilot has ended. They've gone to a kind of a sustainment environment now. So we're seeing more and more of those tools being approved for usage. Certainly, our executive corps are on tablets Certainly BlackBerry's been around for a while. Smartphones are starting to appear. And so as more and more of those tools get become available for daily use, we're deploying them. Certainly in a business environment, you know, you've probably talked to a lot of industry guys. Very few of them are without those kinds of tool sets nowadays. And we're getting that way within the Army.
Very good. Now, we are almost out of time. Before I let you go, I always like to ask my one kind of getaway question that I ask all CIOs. A lot of vendors listening to my show. What should vendors know about working with the Army Contracting Command and specifically your office?
One thing that certainly vendors should know about the Army Contracting Command, and certainly contracting is our middle name, but we have a lot of different business lines that we execute. We're built along the traditional lines of an Army command, so we certainly have a G6 or CIO. We certainly have G1 or personnel. We have G2 security and intelligence, and we certainly have G8 finance. So we have a lot of different business lines. And so one of the services I like to provide to my compatriots across the command is servicing not just the contracting business line, but the financial, the logistics. So we're always looking for tool sets that can help us do our jobs day in, day out, not just the technology job, but also the financial management job, the logistics management job, the personnel management jobs, things of that nature. So we provide a whole spectrum of different service lines for the command. It's certainly contracting is the major one, but we have other service lines as well. And a lot of people don't realize that about Army Contracting Command.
All right, good advice. I think contractors need to understand that and how your office and how the Army Contracting Command works. My guest today was Gino Magnifico, the Army Contracting Command's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Gino, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you, Jason. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.